For WHUS Stores, I'm Dory Smith in the Public Affairs Department. Our guests on the program today are Sonny Miller, Executive Director of the Trap Rock Peace Center of Deerfield, Massachusetts, and Charlie Jenks, former president at Trap Rock and the developer of their impressive website, traprockpeace.org. Today we will be talking about Trap Rock Peace Center's efforts to educate people about the dangers of depleted uranium munitions being used in Afghanistan and Iraq. A film being distributed at traprockpeace.org tells the shocking story of what is happening to U.S. troops and civilians in war zones as a result of DU. There's a report at traprockpeace.org written by retired U.S. Air Force Major Doug Roeke, Ph.D., an Army health physicist during the Gulf War. But he questions whether or not the U.S. military acknowledges its own regulations on DU and asks if the military will comply with environmental and health care mandates for both the U.S. and Iraq. Today, Sonny Miller and Charlie Jenks talk about their longstanding efforts to push the U.S. military and government beyond the point of making low-key admissions about the health risks of DU and forward into an action phase where emergency health care, cleanups, and public education about the risks of DU are finally begun on the emergency scale that is necessary. Sonny Miller, why don't you sum up for us what you hope people might learn about depleted uranium weapons and give us the general overview of what they can do?
Well, the uranium weapons are used by all branches of our military. Many people aren't aware of this. A tank round can contain about 10 pounds of uranium waste. It's called depleted because a very small fraction of U-235 has been extracted, but the remains still contain U-235, lots of U-238, and as the weapons are manufactured, trace elements of other contaminants that are very dangerous. Scientists tell us that the toxicity of this heavy metal may be even more damaging than its radioactive quality because manufacturers were happy to put lead in gasoline and paint, it's been convenient for weapons manufacturers to use this abundant material, but the effects on the troops and the civilians are devastating. When the concentrations of uranium are exploded, they will pulverize into, you know, many fragments and very fine dust matter, particulate matter, that can't be trapped by any air filter, even if you could wear those gas masks in a combat zone, in a desert environment, you know, without cooking yourself. So none of the troops are protected. None of the people at the test firing ranges in Indiana or Vieques or elsewhere across the continent or out in the Pacific, everywhere we are exposed through mining, through the shipments, through testing, through manufacture. Here in Massachusetts, in Concord, Henry David Thoreau's backyard, there's a Superfund site from the groundwater contamination, and residents there began to inquire. The StarMet facility used to be called Nuclear Metals Incorporated, and, you know, I think that it requires everywhere that engaged citizens ask questions. They don't have to know all the answers, but the process of caring and asking questions makes all the difference.
Now, you mentioned the Superfund site. I understand that national bills are in play here, federal bills, one proposed by Representative McDermott of Washington State that would indeed call for the cleanup of depleted uranium weapons materials that have somehow contaminated the country of that they're made in.
It's not a surprise that the representative in Congress taking the lead on this is an MD from Washington State. And the Seattle Post-Intelligencer has done a great job on reporting on the hazards of this weapon. I think in lots of other areas of the country, the media hasn't told the story. It's a frightening story. And unless people will call and ask for the truth, we're not going to get it in our standard media. The legislation calls for research. The real need is to stop production, stop use, and then get concerned about some environmental remediation widespread assessment of contaminated areas, but the initial phases of cleanup could just make the problem worse, because we heard from a scientist who attended the World Uranium Weapons Conference in Hamburg, Germany, in the fall of 2003, that when a tank that was hit was removed from a locale, it was much harder for them to take their radiation monitoring instruments and find the sources of contamination. So I'm a bit wary about the concept of cleanup here, and ask for us instead to focus on stopping production and use. I'm grateful, Dori, that your radio station and others are asking for the story, because it's through regional and local media that the story is breaking. Neighbors in South Dakota, in Indiana, in Wisconsin, in Minnesota, in Florida are sharing resources. We helped bring Doug Rocky, the Gulf War veteran, Gulf War I veteran, who trained troops in nuclear, biological, and chemical warfare and afterwards took some responsibility for bulldozing equipment into a hole in the sand and shipping other equipment back as so-called low-level radioactive waste at a tremendous cost. The friendly fire so-called, I shouldn't, you know, when it's strange to be using the language of oppression, the terrible tragedies of seeing the effects of our own weapons up close when our own troops are hit becomes apparent when we've got to clean up our mess and we have to tend to our victims. Of course, the occupying force, the U.S., and other countries occupying in Iraq are responsible for health care for civilians, and they're not getting it. The vets are getting rather terrible health care. For a long time, the directive was leave the shrapnel in, and the veterans were studied to see what the effects were. Right now, Gerard Matthew, a Gulf War II vet and a reservist in New York who works as an occupational therapist, was in Iraq driving trucks. He came down with such terrible headaches. I said, could you explain what you mean by headache? He said, well, it's like someone driving a nail into your head. He might black out. He might urinate himself. This is more than any headache I've ever experienced. And his daughter has already been born with missing much of her right hand. The veterans from the Gulf are three times as likely to have a child with heart defect. There are both visible results and invisible results, and the VA is mainly pushing pills rather than providing the appropriate urine analysis and mass spectrometry that shows without a doubt that the depleted uranium is the contaminant and likely to be causing thousands, hundreds of thousands of cases of so-called Gulf War syndrome. I'm afraid it's been a case of don't look, don't find, don't tell on the part of the military for a long time. In spite of that, there are people within the system who are doing research that will show. Alexandra Miller shows the rates of cell abnormality to be quite high. She works for the Armed Forces Radiobiology Research Institute, AFRI, in Maryland. We heard her at MIT. I'd like to bring on the line Charlie Jenks, if I may. He's our wonderful website maker and has been a tireless volunteer for years now at Trap Rock and past president. He's now the chairperson of our advisory board. And Charlie could tell the story of the government, one person in the government who actually said, look for resources on depleted uranium at traprockpeace.org. Charlie Jenks?
Oh, hi. This, Dorian, this is Charlie Jenks.
Welcome.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you both for joining us. And you mentioned the website, and actually I was just reading some of the reports by Dr. Douglas Roque. They can be found there at traprockpeace.org. He was the U.S. Army nuclear health physicist who turned whistleblower. He served as the Pentagon's DU health impacts person. Fill us in on just the stories that are on your website and how astounding they really are.
Well, thank you. Well, we have depleted uranium is one of the focal points for the website, but we have a lot on there besides that. We started, I think, working with Doug Rocky. He was an inspiration for a lot of the beginning work on it in terms of the depleted uranium. And we took him around to 30 cities in the U.S. He also, after that, started a tour nationally. So I think that we did a lot in getting his message out nationally and internationally. He's really been the prime whistleblower on depleted uranium. And the military has tried very hard to denigrate him. They've attacked him. They've had people try to prevent him from speaking at events by contacting organizers ahead of time. There's been some disinformation about him that has been attempted. And the thing is that he carries his orders with him, so we're always able to show that he is exactly what he says he is. He was a health physicist for the Army. He has a PhD in science education and worked as a health physicist tasked to try to clean up the depleted uranium mess. But again, this was only U.S. vehicles in Iraq that had been hit. Hundreds of Iraqi vehicles that had been hit were just rotting in the desert, children playing with the spent rounds, climbing through the tanks. Cancer rates have skyrocketed around Basra, for example, where a lot of Gulf One activity happened. And, the resources on the web point out, these facts, they point out things that the government has tried to do to keep things from coming to light. For example, U.S. attempts to keep the WHO,
the World Health Organization,
from investigating depleted uranium in Iraq before the Second Gulf War. We have government documents on the website. If you have an organization as large as the government, nothing can be kept a secret forever, and government documents have leaked out, which have admitted the dangers of depleted uranium. There's a presentation by Colonel Wakayama, which went into some detail about the risks of DU in terms of both the radiation and the toxicity, risks of bone cancer, and recommending that they no longer continue the practice of leaving fragments in the body, that they take them out. This one myth the military still comes out with is, this stuff is so benign, you can just leave it in the body. Well, Colonel Wakayama of the Army is saying, get it out of there. So there are a lot of those kinds of resources. And to give you one example of, I think, is a DU cover-up, really. If you remember, shortly after the Gulf War II started, there was a battle in Nasiriyah, and about 10 GIs were killed, and the story that went out was that these GIs were killed as a result of Iraqis who were pretending to surrender, then turn their guns on the GIs, all those treacherous Iraqis. I mean, that was the message that was out there. In fact, what it was a so-called friendly fire situation where two A-10s came along and strafed the GIs with depleted uranium rounds. And we learned this by listening to a report by Jackie Northam on NPR, and I just copied that clip of her report, put it on the website. They interviewed Marine historians, she did, who talked about what happened. They interviewed soldiers at the time talking about they're getting strafed. And the Marine historian that it was quoted in her report said that, it's one thing to be shot, but to be shot by DU, which basically turns you into a handful of mush. This whole thing was suppressed by this crazy story that it was just totally made up, that these were killed, these people were killed because of Iraqis trying to surrender, which is a total lie. And this sort of thing, I think, typifies the U.S. government attempt to cover up what's going on with depleted uranium.
Charlie Jenks, as you went through the development of this website, it must have occurred to you how long this whole question has been going back and forth between scientists and veterans and victims support groups from Iraq, doctors and others so concerned about the consequences of these munitions. And at the same time, the military's constant replies. Now, to what extent do you think the military has become more responsive to the kinds of problems that have been cited and associated with depleted uranium exposure? These are everything from kidney trouble to cancers. People have cited mental illness related to depleted uranium weapons exposure. Certainly there are problems relating to the lungs, problems related to the organs in and around where these wounds might have occurred that you've been talking about. and just various immune diseases. So let's discuss this question again of the difference, the vast amount of difference between what very well-researched people are claiming and what the military has consistently been saying. Do you see that there's been any progress there at all?
Well, I don't think there's been much, if any, progress with the U.S. military. The British military actually distributes the depleted uranium warning card to all of its troops in the Iraq War theater. And it tells them that they may have been exposed to depleted uranium and that they have a right to testing. Mike Hoffman, another vet, he's one of the co-founders of Iraq Veterans Against the War. He'd asked about testing and was basically laughed at, he said. Gerard and Matthew had testing done, and they lost his sample. And he had to be retested, and it was taking forever to get it back. And he finally went to an independent organization, the Uranium Medical Research Center, and they did the testing. When Dr. Asaf Durakovich, who was a colonel in the Army, he was the head of the VA hospital in Maryland, I believe it was Maryland, he had tested a lot of soldiers and sent in their samples. They all got lost, and then he was fired. They have a point man, Mike Kilpatrick, with the Department of Defense, who was basically the chief propagandist in favor of depleted uranium. So I don't think that the U.S. military is really doing a whole lot here. They say that people have a right to testing, but they don't have any widespread testing program. There have been calls for the department to comply with its own regulations on cleaning up depleted uranium in Iraq and elsewhere. Under the regulations, there is a requirement for testing, for health assessments for both civilians and soldiers. And there have been some calls within the military journals, to comply with these regulations. I haven't seen the fruits of any of these calls yet, but there have been two calls that actually are on our website. And the curious thing about it is that both of these military journals refer to our website for people that want to see the Army regulations. I thought that was a little bit amusing that we seem to be the repository for Army regulations now on depleted uranium.
Well, let me say, too, that when it comes to reports from the military, again, we're going to be talking about a lot of medical issues. I did interview radiation specialist and geoscientist Lauren Moret, who is considered one of the most knowledgeable people about the health effects of depleted uranium. And she spoke about the chromosome testing that she recommends. But before we get to that point, let me go back to the U.S. military and just say that there was a February 23, 2004 story by Kevin Dougherty in Stars and Stripes. And he says that this time depleted uranium questions are coming from the Army first. And he quotes Captain James Mancuso from the U.S. Army Center for Health Promotion, who reassured him that the Army was doing more testing, not waiting for soldiers to broach the subject of radiation exposure this time. And again, we get the sense, it's been going on in a cycle for so many years.
One of the tests the Army was doing concerned taking a blood sample. Physicians and scientists will explain that a urine sample is much better because you can take 2 quarts of urine. You can't take 2 quarts of blood. And so I'm afraid that, taking the initiative can lead soldiers and the public down the wrong path. Certainly we hope that there are individuals in government who are taking the right initiatives. According to the people who've done the chromosomal analysis that Lauren recommends, Heike Schroeder, a German woman, was involved with the study of the chromosomes of, I think it was about 19 veterans, and one person, one of those subjects, was working in manufacturing. They found an average of 5 times the level of normal chromosomal damage among subjects who were contaminated, and the person who had the highest level in contamination had a 14 times normal level of chromosomal damage. So not only are we talking about the immediate health effects that veterans and civilians are suffering, the terrible birth defects that are showing up in Iraq, in Afghanistan probably too, although we aren't getting as much news from Afghanistan, and certainly among Gulf War veterans' children's brain skull deformations, terrible atrophy and small limbs. There's double the rate of birth defects in general, and those are the ones that are visible. The chromosomal damage, of course, can be passed on generation to generation to generation and be with us for as long as contaminated peoples are in our family tree.
Now, we have just interviewed Pat Dillon here at WHUS Stores in Connecticut, and Dillon wrote legislation 6008. It passed, actually, with only two no votes, and so hopefully it will be made into law in the state of Connecticut. This bill calls for private funding for testing, private testing of members of the armed forces serving in Iraq at various times, and that bill, she talked about in the sense that there may need to be some amendments. The bill has been tabled for now, while Connecticut is in a very, very busy legislative process, but she's hopeful about it. She is also someone who graduated from Yale and has as her master's degree public health. So she's very familiar with veterans issues, too, in the state, and wrote this bill in response to the fact that soldiers were not getting consistent quality or appropriately timed testing for depleted uranium, nor were they getting appropriate information given to them about the need for testing for depleted uranium weapons exposure in the Iraq war zone. Now, one of the things that you mentioned, Sonny Miller, is that the urine testing is the best way to diagnose the presence of the DU, depleted uranium, and uranium toxins in the system. The point that Representative Pat Dillon had made is that it really matters at what time you take that urine test.
Well, as soon after exposure as possible is best, and so you're getting this word out right now will help some of the troops who were in Iraq when family members email them the news that either they're in Iraq or on their way home. They can wash out bottles with deionized water and collect a urine sample for 24 hours, seal up the bottles, and, you know, then when funding and testing becomes available, the most contaminated urine sample is available. The cost ranges, I hear, about $1,000 for this mass spectrometry, which is done at several universities, mainly in Europe right now. Of course, there are facilities in the U.S. who could do it. They're not doing it. And I hope that Connecticut will decide that this is a situation that they will begin funding. The state legislature will fund the first 50 tests. That's $50,000, a drop in the bucket if it will help to stop this use and contamination.
Let's talk about the need for public education, because I know at Trap Rock Peace Center, you are doing an awful lot to educate the public, both with the website that Charlie Jenks has worked so hard to develop, and that is just so brilliant, I have to say. But also, there's a video. Why don't you talk about that?
Yes, the filmmakers are Frieder Wagner and Valentin Thurn, produced by Oka Productions. The copyright is held by Telepool, and we've invested a lot of money to get the rights to distribute this throughout the U.S. It's available on our website, traprockpeace.org, for home use, and you can pass it around to young people who are thinking about joining the military. They need to know what they're signing up for. I don't think people will sign up for what they'll see in this film. The veterans from Great Britain are the first people to speak in the film, and they talk about the health problems their children are having. Then we see the gathering of soil samples, water samples, indications of the massive scale of contamination. The Baghdad streets now, we're not talking just about desert warfare. This illegal war brought these toxic and radioactive weapons right into the heart of the cradle of civilization, into the heart of Baghdad. All those bombardments we heard on the radio airwaves and national broadcasts, the battle at the Baghdad airport, we can imagine that area is completely contaminated now. the film showings are can be at any church hall, any town hall, any high school auditorium, any college, any medical college. And we need people to take initiative and say, I will organize a showing in my town, and we'll be happy to email a contract. They can call Trap Rock at 413-773-7427. And so there's both avenues, the home avenue, if you want to purchase a video, and the public showing, if you're up for that. And these are licensed public showings. Eventually, the filmmakers hope that this film will be shown on television in the United States. And it's exciting to anticipate which television station will air this documentary shown on German public television.
Let me ask you finally, Charlie Jenks, knowing what you know now after having worked on this tremendous website project of yours, what kind of things would you like to say to veterans about what the military isn't saying?
There are a lot of things, really. I mean, one thing that we know from Gulf War One is that about 200,000 veterans are on permanent disability with Gulf War I-related illnesses and injuries, and over 8,000 have died after the war due to Gulf War I-related illnesses and injuries. We can only imagine what's going to happen with this war. And I think that veterans need to really be concerned about their health and to demand that they get appropriate health care, you know, through the VA, that they talk to their representatives, you know, if they run into any kind of roadblocks at all. I mean, there are great organizations for veterans. There's Veterans for Peace, which is a national organization. Or, you know, families of veterans, with military families, speak out. And in relation to this current war, there's Iraq Veterans Against the War, IVAW.net. So there are organizations of veterans who are coming together, working together, and I would suggest that veterans consider joining one of these groups.
And may I add, Dory, that veterans who are being exposed right now, the soldiers, the sailors, the pilots, should know that citrates can help the uranium move through the kidneys. Not the acidic aspect of citric acid, but if you can't get citrates over the counter at your health food store, if you're stationed in Iraq, at least the citrus fruits can be of some help. And that news was brought to us from Glenn Lawrence at the State University of New York on Long Island. We'll be posting some commentaries from Glenn and also from Dr. Tom Fazy at the Mount Sinai School of Medicine. When we met with them, one of the Hiroshima maidens was there and said, oh, as a matter of fact, as a girl, after the Hiroshima bombing, I craved oranges. And my mother was worried at the rate I was craving oranges. She might wake up in the morning and see beside my bed a little mountainous pile of orange peels for the number she had eaten at night. But her neighbors noticed that she was healthier than other victims. So please send that word forth to people who are exposed. I hope that we're not only going to worry about our soldiers, our neighbors, our young people who might become exposed or who have been exposed, but also carry our message forward that we are very concerned about the health of the Iraqis. We're all in this boat together. These contaminants will circulate through wind patterns around the globe. As we know, Chernobyl affected California and Vermont health statistics. The depleted uranium is not knowing any borders. On whatever desk you're sitting at, you've got a telephone. I hope you'll pick it up and make a call asking your questions. One other angle that most people might not be aware of, these shipments of weapons, uranium weapons, have been made through an exemption offered by the Department of Transportation so that no placard with the word radioactive was required. By law, radioactive shipments carry that placard. Well, the military asked for an exemption. They said, we don't want people to worry and think we might be carrying nuclear weapons if we post both the warning card explosive and the warning card radioactive. And so through the good works of Glenn Milner at the Ground Zero Center for Nonviolent Action in Washington State, and a Freedom of Information Act inquiry, Glenn did a great deal of research, and his group and Trap Rock and Military Toxics and the Nuke Watch group have asked neighbors everywhere, send a letter to the DOT. If you look at the TrapRockPeace.org website, you'll see the background on this and what great success. The DOT has not renewed the exemption following about 300 letters from the public and special interest groups combined.
We're talking with Sunny Miller. She is the executive director of Trap Rock Peace Center, and that's in Deerfield, Massachusetts, traprockpeace.org. Let's talk finally about what your recommendations are to soldiers. What can they do first if they've heard this program, had not known about this risk to their health or their family's health, and would like to know more? Who should they contact?
People can immediately call Trap Rock, 413-773-7427. And at our website, there are links to veterans groups that are very concerned and ready to be of help. And of course, don't forget, take the citrates and collect a 24-hour urine sample in bottles washed clean with deionized water. You can do that right away.
Sunny Miller and Charlie Jenks, I just want to thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Dory, so much. What you're doing is crucial.
We've been speaking with Sunny Miller, Executive Director of the Trap Rock Peace Center of Deerfield, Massachusetts, and Charlie Jenks, a former president at Trap Rock Peace Center, as well as the developer of Trap Rock's impressive website, traprockpeace.org. For WHUS Stores, I'm Dory Smith in the Public Affairs Department. For further information about this program, write to me at theshockvote@yahoo.com.